The respondents to the two speakers of this half of the session are Lisa Steele and Kim Tomczak. They have been doing video works, photo text works, performances, and collaborating in numerous ways since 1983. They did independent work before that, which will be well known to many people in this audience. They are founders of V-Tape, produced many internationally renowned videos, Lisa and Kim, Kim and Lisa.
We'll have a little presentation before we do a little response also. We addressed some of from the package of materials we were given. We addressed just a couple of key issues as we decided to address them, which doesn't have anything to do with our predecessors, so our apologies. Around the rethinking of the relationship between museums and audiences, we wanted to just speak, of course, about video. Video is not any different as a medium and artistic practice from any of the other artistic practices, as they're called, so-called. We would note that there's been an increase in the appearance of time-based media in exhibitions, from the large-scale expositions to the private galleries and artist-run centers. Time-based media would include, in this case, video, film, performance, performative work, as Jim and Jennifer called it, web-based and interactive work.
But there is a difference between the large-scale installations that can only exist in museums and the work of, let's say, more grassroots artist practice. Video was created as a distributable, democratic, easy-to-circulate artistic medium that could be said to have succeeded. There are hundreds of festivals and screenings locally, nationally, internationally, that show the work of artists working in time-based media. These audiences, the audience for these events are enormous, enthusiastic, and more importantly, knowledgeable. These audiences are not recognized by the museum community. That's why young artists, First Nations artists, and many others have turned almost exclusively to these festivals and artist-run programs for their audiences.
So even though time-based work informs the discourse of much of contemporary art practice, it is not acknowledged in museological practice today. Seldom are the study, the research, the preservation, and the display of time-based arts integrated into any institution's policy.
So this is all to further problematize what we're all here to talk about. Active collections. These are, for the most part, molting in the grave.
And then we thought about the capacity. This is another key issue from the package. The capacity of the institution to address issues of representation, including First Nations and culturally diverse production and art forms that have not been easily integrated into the gallery setting. And we just wanted to ask a question about that, or to make an observation. The cultural production amongst First Nations peoples is most likely to occur, or often occurs, within very traditional media that are ignored by the art collections as art, and more focused in ethnographic collections. And then, of course, First Nations artists are working very strongly, very, very strongly internationally and nationally in new media, including performance and video and web-based work. And these, of course, are equally ignored by high culture institutions, so it's a double shutout.
And now, just to get on with the respondents' responsibility here, I was intrigued by Sigrid's presentation, and although, Kitty Scott's presentation earlier today, you get that kind of chill when you think of everyone's, you know, like this history being put into little boxes, and it seems very Orwellian on one hand, and it also seems to be more about the, it seems, this is obvious, but it's so much about the collector, and I'm wondering what the strategy will be to explain the collector versus the collection. Like how active will be, I mean, eventually, you know, he'll go away and the collection will continue to function and we'll forget that it was this like moment in time when this activity was happening. Many of these artists are still alive. This practice would still be called contemporary, yet they're kind of contained in this almost, I think Vera was getting at it earlier today, but all this almost kind of like little tombs almost. I'm just wondering how will you keep this notion that I think you called it the idea of the radical alive.
And I just wanted to make one observation. When we're talking about some of what I have to ask the question that because I fill out the grants for VTAPE, and so I know what the Canada Council wants, and I know that young audiences, are a target now, and I'd really like to know if that's part of the reason that we're counting them a little bit more, or we're beginning to count them a little bit more, and if we are counting them, we may not be looking in the right place. So that's just a more general comment for everybody around this these issues, who's the viewer and who is counting them in particular. And I also want to just throw out the term, to quote Ulla from yesterday, her term cultural justice, and in particularly in relation to interdisciplinary practice that Peter is referring to and presenting so strongly, cultural justice around the work of young artists who are working in interdisciplinary ways, or of any artists working in interdisciplinary ways, whether or not it's radical or not radical, they're dragging around, you know, little trailers and parking in places, and they're working in the streets and they're working everywhere. And the museums are working to a certain extent to, I think, to show this or to hook their wagon onto it in some cases. And I wonder how strong that commitment is, particularly in terms of collecting, because museums, after all, characterize themselves by collections.
Thanks a lot.
We have
I'm going to be on my best behavior and recognize that these questions should be answered first by the panelists, if they wish to do so, and then I'll take questions from the floor. Sigrid, would you like to respond to Kim's question about entombing, entombment, collector and collected?
Yes, of course. The collector. I mean, I've mentioned the collector because, of course, I mean, he is a constituent of that collection, and also this is why I mentioned that some of the items in the collection are addressed directly to him. So his archive was in itself, and it called itself an archive as an artistic intervention in some sense too. So it's more like being an artist himself too. And while dealing with this collection, of course, if you want to open it up, you have to problematize this. Course, yeah. And for example, I mean, I didn't have time enough to list all these problems connected with that. For example, he was not alone. I mean, he had a wife, and they were both together collecting these things. And one part of the story, which is more anecdotal, is that he had to sell somehow this collection to sell her out because of a divorce, and now she somehow disappeared out of this frame. And that would be, for example, one of the stories you would have to retell while putting this all on display. The other thing would be, I've got, for example, PhD student. She's just finishing her dissertation on the myth of bridging the gap between life and art in Fluxus movement, and the concept of masculinity and femininity, which is included in these things, because using, for example, daily life items for a male artist could be some kind of avant-garde statement. And at the same time, when one of the women did that, like Alison Knowles, of course, it was somehow forgotten. Anyway, I mean, there are quite lots of things in this direction we have to ask of this collection, and we have to make that stories present again. So at the same time, the strategy of the museum is to make them forgotten.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Peter, do you want to respond to Lisa's question and point?
I concur.
He concurs. In which case, I'll open the floor for questions. I see a hand right here.
Hi.
Could you identify?
My name is Ben Portis, and I'm from the Art Gallery of Ontario. I have just some comments that are general, but they'll lead back to what I kind of hear from both this session and the previous panel. It seems to me that the museum is, in its origins, was a very embryonic kind of thing, and the modernist transformation of the museum was that it was like a big bang, that museums started becoming specialized and also professionalized. And it seems to me that the force of a big bang is that things become more and more divergent, and so that, you know, once there was a closer co-identity between the curator and the educator and different kinds of classes of objects and materials could coexist, and that seems no longer possible. One of the things that I hear as a frustration is where ideas need to have ability to sort of move through different contexts, there's no longer really institutions that are available, or even professionals that feel comfortable moving across these boundaries. That, and they're not boundaries. It's just that things are moving apart from one another.
Do you want the panel to try and address that? That sort of that that.
So,
those boundaries and
well, one of the things that I find about the whole conference is that it should be called Art Museums After Modernism, because it ignores that there's all these other kinds of museums, and we're really presuming that art should be setting the agenda, and art does often set the agenda because it has managed to locate itself at the forefront of whatever kind of museum culture tends to be in most cities, and it's only a few centers that actually do have a diversity of museum types. And so well, what I hear in Windsor is that there isn't a breadth to quite situate this very complex idea about the Arctic, and then the problem of something like an archive, which actually has its own history, and the library, which has its own history, starting to.
Perhaps I think you've raised a number of points there, and it'd be useful to hear from the panel on those, but particularly the one that got the applause with regard to art museums leading the agenda, and therefore. Skewing the pitch, as it were, or maybe this conference doing that. So, could I ask any of the four people here to address that? Because I think it's an important question.
Well, I was just glad to hear Jim and Jennifer say we did our exhibition in non-art museums, and I thought that kind of broke the spell, of, in a sense, and it opened it up for this. But I agree, it is. We are talking. I don't know why it's not called art museums. It's a good question.
Yeah.
Peter?
You know, I can kind of just describe from experience some of how this works, and it's, you know, there's no, I'm not sure what the answers are, except that, you know, this language doesn't exist. I think it would be really great to meet with some of the people from Leeds, because they actually have a program that are bringing these areas together, I gather, and understand, and it is meaningful. It's coming together in a meaningful way. But certainly in our own experience in this country, we have completely different establishments or solitudes in terms of museums, and there is no discussion that goes back and forth. I was involved in a project in 1994 called Naming a Practice, Curatorial Strategies for the Future, that was organized to discuss curating, and it was circulated not only to art galleries, but to every museum. We were inviting submissions for participation. And it was distributed across the country to every single museum. And we didn't have any applications from outside of an art museum. Now, maybe what we were doing was inflected in that direction, or obviously was perceived to be that way. If you go to a meeting of the Canadian Museums Association, you'll see very relatively little fine art component or visual art component. And I think that in terms of what I was trying to talk about or some of the things that I've tried to think through with this exhibition, you know, those are really serious questions, because at the heart, I think, of what I was trying to do here is that there is a subject that's significant, that's latent in all of these collections, which does not have a means to come forward and to be debated and become part of a public discourse because of this. So, you know.
Thank you, Peter. I think there's Joanne Lamoureux has a question that may address this as well.
Yes. I would just like to point that if the agenda seems to be so much controlled by the art museums, it's because the very issue of museums after modernism has to do with the way art stuck museum in the constraints of modernism. I mean, the very idea of art as an autonomous realm and of a specific world, remote from the social, and of the museum that goes with that ideology, was a modern construct, and moving out of that construct, we might suggest that art is trying to do its mea culpa into setting the agenda, that perhaps it should self-efface a little more in order to help undo that process, but it's in a sense normal that art is setting the agenda for museums after modernism, given what I just said. And it brings me to a question that I would have liked to ask to Jennifer and Jim, but I'm happy to ask it in front of Peter, because it's a Montreal-based question that I have. I was surprised hearing Jim and Jennifer. It struck me how much they come from where I come, namely that in the Canadian context of a very strong, lively, and challenging freelance curatorial practice, instead of addressing their practice as a move away from the realm of aesthetics and into the politics, they first and foremost think of their practice as a rethinking of the aesthetics, hoping and shaping it in a way that it will have political repercussion. And that to me is very specific to their practice, and it probably also I would like them to answer to that, and I might like to have Peter's answer to that position that I'm putting on the table now.
If it gets passed on to Jim and Jennifer, then they can answer. Sigrid, did you want to say something that related to that as well?
No, it's a direct question, yeah. So he should directly answer. Yeah.
Okay. Peter, go ahead. Please.
I'll just make a really quick comment and pass it on to Jim and Jennifer. But I really, in turn, one of the things is, there's so many things, obviously, that I would like to have been able to say about this exhibition or the entire approach to it. But in fact, these, as you even saw from that tape, these in some ways are really serious manipulations of material, of existing material, and they're put together in very, in terms of display, and I think this is where I really feel an overlap or common sense, a common feeling with what Jim and Jennifer are doing, where you really read these ideas through the materials, through the very nature of what they are, and the curatorial component of that, which, you know, in some ways you can say it fudges the line with art, with making art or curating or whatever, I'm not really that concerned with that, is what brings those meanings forward or makes it possible to come forward. And so that's, I wouldn't have a chance to show the slides, but when you go through that exhibition, it's a very, and in some ways I'm glad I didn't show the slides, because my lousy slides can't capture, in some ways I think, the almost kind of visceral, in Jim and Jennifer's word term, haptic experience that you have as you go through this process, or really in some ways the process that the exhibition represents. So it doesn't just so much work against the conventions of display of museum display, but it's very strong in terms of display. But I would also might add, not by using spectacular means. There are no big projections. There are actually lots of little 13-inch televisions where these things are shown. You saw it at a scale that's far expanded from what you would see it in the exhibition.
Sigrid, you had a comment to an earlier question beforehand. I am conscious of time. I know Irit is speaking at 1. I know there's lunch between now and then. So I think, and I would reiterate again, as I did before, that we must, or we will, come back to some of these questions in the wrap-up tomorrow, where it will be a plenary session. Sigrid, would you respond to there? It's a final note on this panel.
Well.
Pardon? Are they down here too? I couldn't see them. I'm sorry. Yeah, you go first, and then Sigrid. You're in the dark. The house lights are playing tricks with my eye. Excuse me.
Stand up. Okay. Well, very interesting question, Joanne. Thank you.
Close to the mic.
Okay. Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a whole elaborate, you know, theorization of reconsidering the aesthetic, and that's sort of at the basis of our practice. And I guess just the upshot is that, you know, we're moving away from philosophical aesthetics, and it was extraordinarily liberating to find this redefinition of the aesthetics that's coming out of feminist inquiry and cultural studies that thinks of the aesthetic as not only a criteria of judgment or a fixed meaning or evaluation or connoisseurship, so it supports that, but on the other side, as a category that can help you understand how perception takes place as a category of cognition. So that has to do with experience, the senses, the body, and performativity, so embodiment itself. So they're, you know, sort of opened up the terrain for us that we're exploring. And maybe Jim has a...
Does it have something to do with living in Montreal and Quebec?
Well, it's an extraordinary community. It's relational. We work across difference all the time, linguistic, you know, many other kinds of difference. It's affirms sort of vitality in the community. There's a great art community. It's very mutually supportive. Interdisciplinarity is active in all the universities, New York community itself. So, yes, I think Montreal really has helped facilitate our practice, and it's been very supportive of our projects. So we're grateful for that.
Sigrid, the last word.
Yes, okay. I just wanted to take up that remark that perhaps, the art museum would be the main paradigm here I discussed. And I'm not so sure whether I would be so, whether I would immediate answer as Jean Lamoureux did, that contemporary art would be perhaps the paradigm to take up the questions of crossing the borders of all those institutions. Well, I think that you can address art and curatorial practices also in museums of art while having all the other kinds of art, the other museums in mind, and that's just what I wanted to try to show too. Perhaps I wasn't clear enough in doing so, because I think that the perspective we have now is that of a cultural history perspective, a cultural studies perspective, in which, of course, the classification into different dimensions, like this would be art and that would be, for example, item of another whatever science, has slightly shifted to a meta-theory of how do these classifications themselves make the order of all these hierarchies. And, of course, contemporary artists do take up these questions themselves too, and when they address these questions by doing art, it's their comment. And at the same time, when I'm commenting from a cultural history perspective of, well, kind of scientific or scholarly position. So I think there might be here an antagonism. Well, it sounded to me as if an antagonism would be promoted, which is not really there any longer.
Thank you very much, and my thanks to everybody, first and second halves, who spoke in this session. Thank you.